Our next case, Fernandez v. Berthold. Fernandez v. Berthold.
Chief Judge, and may it please the Court, in this case we assign four assignments of error. Assignment number two deals with aggravation of pre-existing condition instruction under NJI Section 4.09. Since this case was briefed, the Nebraska Supreme Court decided Rodriguez v. Spitzky earlier this month, and so I won't address jury instruction number two. I would like to address, I'd actually like to start with our jury instruction number three, which is pattern jury instruction 3.42, which has to do with concurrent causes. In this case, plaintiff asked for 3.42. It was made a record of not only in our request for jury instructions, it was discussed at the jury instruction conference, it's been assigned on appeal, it is before you, and our remedy is reversal and remand with an appropriate instruction for a new trial with an appropriate instruction to the jury. Concurrent causes is the subject of jury instruction, or pattern instruction 3.42, and in this case, we have at least seven other arguable concurrent causes that the jury should have been instructed on as to other possible causes of the unfortunate outcome for Mr. Hernandez in this case. Just to refresh the court, he's in the emergency room, CAT scan is run, the CAT scan read comes back on the night of the 17th at about 8:30, and it comes from a resident. And the resident says, slightly enlarged appendix, 1.1 centimeters. The defendant in this case didn't know the significance of the 1.1 centimeters, didn't examine the patient, never met the patient, and based on a workup by residents, discharged the patient. And the defendant in this case says, I'm responsible for the discharge. I am. I'm the ultimate. I'm the captain of the ship. It's my job to decide discharge. Yet throughout the case, the theme of the defense seems to be, well, you know, I didn't have that reading, that full reading on the CAT scan, because the radiologist staff physician that overread it the next day gave information that the CAT scan interpretation was to be highly suspicious of appendicitis. And so one could blame that resident, Dr. Brink, the night before for misinterpreting the CAT scan.
But there was no evidence that Dr. Brink breached the standard of care, was there?
There was not, but the jury knew that that was an incomplete and inaccurate CAT scan reading. And the jury knew that the hospital didn't have a policy that the patient doesn't leave the emergency room until a staff physician overreads that CT scan. And so the jury could have looked at that and said, well, gosh, the resident did it wrong, and the hospital doesn't have this policy. And then the call the next morning by Dr. Oliveto, who's the staff radiologist, she calls the doctor and Monson down in the emergency room by 8 o'clock the next morning. The jury could be back there thinking, well, maybe it was Dr. Mobson's fault, because this appendix didn't burst until later. Maybe it's his fault. Maybe it's the hospital's fault. Maybe it's Dr. Dean, the resident, who worked under Dr. Barthold, our defendant here. Maybe Dr. Dean is the one that made the mistake. And a simple instruction to the jury saying, if you think there are concurring causes, that's not a defense. That is no defense for the defendant to not be held responsible. So you could also suggest that Dr. Lamberty, who's a staff physician, and his resident, Dr. Malapudi, went down the same road that the team that replaced them, which is Dr. Barthold, the defendant here, and Dr. Dean, the resident, made similar mistakes. The jury could blame the appendicitis itself. It's a cause. It's a concurring cause. The man has a developing appendicitis. But the jury was never told, just because you have all these concurrent causes, the ultimate responsibility is with the defendant. Now, she said that, and the expert said that, but the jury wasn't instructed to separate out all of these other concurrent causes. And this ties into our fourth assignment of error, which is the evidentiary abuse of discretion assignment. And I know we have a steep burden on that, and I know the long line of your cases and the Supreme Court cases say that great deference is given to the discretion of the trial court. But what does that discretion involve? First off, it involves deciding whether or not there is probative value. Is the answer to the question germane? Is there sufficient probative value? Is it persuasive? Does it help the trier of fact? And is there sufficient and adequate foundation for the answer? And we need that hurdle. And the court said, well, I'm going to keep it out because it's speculative, because Dr. answered the question, and just to go back and revisit, the defendant was asked, what would you have done if you had the overread, if you had the staff physician's read where it says highly suspicious of appendicitis? And defendant Barthold says, well, it's a lot of it depends. But the thing that she doesn't say is that I wouldn't have gone and seen the patient. The it depends comes after her evaluation of the patient. She makes it very clear she would have actually met the plaintiff.
Counsel, isn't that evidence before the jury in the deposition?
No, it's not, because that was stricken. We tried to play that, and the court would not allow us to play those admissions when we played forgive me, Your Honor. The evidence is that she did not ever meet the patient, but at page 43 of her deposition, which is the defendant's, I asked her, you know, what would you have done if you'd had the staff physician's interpretation? And she says, well, it depends, but I would have performed a repeat abdominal exam, repeating someone else's abdominal exam, not hers, because she never did, and potentially had a discussion. That's the part that the trial court would not let the jury hear, either in our case in chief when I'm playing the video that has the statements of the party opponent and the admissions against interest, nor on cross-examination. We made the record, and we made the offer of proof that if she were allowed to answer that question, she would have said, yeah, I would have gone and examined it. And our expert, Dr. Shergan, completes the loop. Dr. Shergan says she had an obligation to understand and appreciate that CT scan. She testified she doesn't know what the 1.1 centimeter means. He testified she has an obligation to get a final read and to know and understand what that CT means. And the defense said this is all confusing. This is a confusing history. Our expert says she had an obligation to sort that out and to get the correct history and to understand the significance of the CT scan. And not letting go out the door until a staff radiologist has told her what that really means. And we know she would have conducted the exam because she said so. So it's not speculative. Now, what would happen on the back end of that? That may have some independence. But it's just like if the person running this building was never told that someone smells smoke and there could be a fire down the way, then what would you have done? Well, it depends. I would have gone and checked it out. Well, the one thing that doesn't depend on is what she would have done immediately, and that's to go evaluate the patient and to determine whether or not there was an appendicitis developing. So we also think jury instructor, the assignment number one, related to the statement of cases error, but if I could, I'd remain the balance of my reserve the balance of my time.
Thank you. And I represent the defendant, Dr. Barthold. I was going to start out with Rodriguez, but I think in fact that does take care of the issue about pre-existing conditions. As far as the negligence of non-parties and the instruction on 3.42, there was no evidence that non-parties were negligent. Dr. Shergan never gave a standard of care opinion against anyone else. This is a medical malpractice action, and there has to be some proof. The standard is not acts of someone else combined with negligence of defendant. It's that the negligence of someone else combined with the negligence of defendant. And there was no evidence of the negligence of anyone else. I think it's worth noting that two of these supposed actors, along with the nurse, were initially defendants in this case, and plaintiff dismissed them. And the logical assumption is that you couldn't make a case against them. And now this is kind of a backdoor way of trying to go after the people that couldn't establish a case by saying, oh, well, their actions combined with Dr. Bartholdt's. And I don't think it meets the standard of showing their negligence.
Can we talk about the testimony from your client that was struck concerning the understanding of CT exam?
Yes, Your Honor. First of all, there's just been a statement that this was an admission. We objected to playing this part of the deposition because it's not an admission. To be an admission, it has to be the words of the party offered against her that contravene a position she took at trial. And she didn't take a position that contravened that.
What's the offer during the plaintiff's case in
chief? Well, the offer of proof, the plaintiff attempted to get that in, yes.
So it shouldn't be. I understand you've been discussing this in your body because it's not disagreeing with what she said at trial. That's understandable.
Well, what I was attempting to say is, the whole basis of plaintiff's position is this testimony should have come in. It was purely speculative. It was based on, the question was, doctor, what would you have done on the 17th if you had had a report that wasn't written until the 18th? And it was objected to as speculative. It's irrelevant to any issue what she would have done if she had read something that didn't exist. And the plaintiff takes this to be an admission, and that's why it should come in. And in Trump, the relevancy and the speculative objections, we don't think they've ever shown that it was an admission. She was asked, what would you have done? And she said, well, there are a tremendous amount of it depends. So she made it clear that she couldn't give an answer. It wasn't a statement against her own interest. Did that answer your question, Your Honor?
Well, I guess I'm not that familiar with the record that I know exactly what the testimony was, but I understood from opposing counsel that there was testimony from Brian, again,
Dr. Sherby.
The doctor, client, failed to understand and appreciate the CT scan and defendant's standard of care violation that approximately caused his client's harm. I understood the testimony that she had offered saying that she did not understand it, and that she would have understood if she had wondered if there's no testing. Maybe I don't understand what the testimony was, and that's my problem.
No, you're correct, Your Honor. That's what the plaintiff is arguing. Dr. Bartholdt's testimony was, she did say that there was some equivocation about what it meant, but the fact is that she had a report from the radiologist saying that the gallbladder was 1.1 centimeters, which could be enlarged, except the radiologist also said that could be a normal variant. So it wasn't cut and dry. He had appendicitis. It could be a normal variant. But there wasn't. The Dr. Almedo came in the next day and overread it. And she did not disagree with Dr. Brink's interpretation. She went a little farther and thought it could be appendicitis. But she didn't say that he was wrong. And there was no question Dr. Bartholdt understood what the report was. The CT report did not say he had appendicitis. It said there was an enlargement that could be a normal variant.
And counsel, I want to clarify what is contained in the record and what was allowed to the jury. So the deposition testimony where your client said, if I had had all of that other CT scan report, we would have performed a repeat abdominal exam and so forth. Wasn't that portion of Exhibit 16 published to the jury at the beginning of trial? Am I wrong about that?
No, I believe that the court excluded it. Plaintiff's counsel can correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't believe that portion came in. In other words, a lot of disputes over what could come in from Dr. Bartle's testimony in the deposition. I'd like to also address the statement of the case. The complaint that was filed had 9 specifications of negligence and 4 defendants. By the time we got to trial, we had 1 defendant, and plaintiff still requested a statement of the case that included all 9 specifications of negligence. And the trial court did what the trial court is required to do, which is balance the entitlement to an instruction when there's evidence to support a requested instruction and it correctly states the law, versus you can't overemphasize one party's position. In the very fact that the jury had been given a list of 9 specifications of negligence, it almost encourages them, look at all these things that could be wrong, you should pick one of them. And instead, what the trial court did was combine them based on Dr. Shurkin's testimony. A couple of times he tried to summarize what his opinions were, and he came down to the 2 the trial court instructed on, which were that she did not personally see and examine the patient and didn't get a surgical consult. And the other 7 that were excluded included not assessing the patient, not examining the patient, not using reasonable care. It does all come under not personally seeing and examining. And not getting the surgical consult is just an offshoot of little specifications such as misdiagnosing, misinterpreting the test, which would have led to a surgical consult. So the court correctly summarized them and limited them rather than endlessly reiterating the plaintiff's position. I think the one thing that whatever plaintiff's arguments are here, I think we have to remember that this was a long trial, a lot of evidence, and the jury just returned a general verdict in favor of Dr. Bartle. And there can be nitpicky, I guess almost I would say, complaints about, for example, the statement of the case, but the fact remains that the jury did not buy into the plaintiff's case. And the plaintiff hasn't shown any prejudicial error that if they would have added something about you didn't exercise reasonable care, that the tide would have turned in their direction. But the court just simply, or the jury did not find it in the plaintiff's favor. And the grounds that have been raised by the plaintiff, we submit, are not grounds for reversal.
Okay.
To the violation of the standard of care. She is not a radiologist. She got a report from a radiologist. And the radiologist actually viewed the CT scan and saw what was there and said, did not say it was appendicitis. And she's entitled to rely on radiologists. Still not sure I answered your question.
Thank you. Good to see you.
Thank you. Regarding the statement of the case or assignment number one, it should have at least included something about the CT scan. We did assign seven different allegations, but the failure to interpret the testing, that should have been done. The court did not really give a basis for whittling down or distilling down the assignments. Regarding Dr. Oliveto's overreading, she also said the next morning that the scan needed to be clinically correlated. And that means you take what the CT scan shows and you correlate that with the history or with the physical examination of the palpation. And that's the loop, and that's where Dr. Shergan says Dr. Oliveto or Dr. Barthel should have known the significance of that. And had she known, that would have led to the diagnosis of the appendicitis.
At the time Dr. Oliveto overread it, had the patient already been discharged?
He's about 12 hours out of the hospital, yeah. And then so the note reads that Dr. Oliveto, the staff radiologist, calls down to the emergency room to Dr. Momsen. Maybe the jury blamed Dr. Momsen. Maybe they said, well, why didn't they try to call the plaintiff? You know, somebody should have said, hey, we got a better reading on your CAT scan. There's more there. Maybe you better come back in. Maybe you better get into a clinic. They could have blamed him for not answering his phone. You know, we don't have that in the record. Your Honor, Judge Moore, it's at page 575 of the record of the bill, mm-hmm. where the court excludes that important passage from Dr. Barthold's statement where the court sustains the objection. And just to revisit that, says, well, if you had, what would you have done, if anything, if you had Dr. Oliveto's interpretation of the CT scan prior to discharge? And then there's the objection by Mr. Daly, which kept it out. But sure, I think there's a tremendous amount of independence based on that. If I had Dr. Oliveto's CT scan, we would have performed a repeat abdominal exam on the patient and then potentially had a discussion with him about going home versus observation.
And that portion was not published was in not the jury at the beginning of the trial?
Correct. Correct. And we made our record. It was not published, and we wanted to cross-examine her on that as well. Regarding 3.42, it doesn't say concurring negligence. It says concurring cause. So we don't have to prove negligence for those other causes, just other causes. So I'm out of time. Thank you very much.
Thank you. The case is submitted. Counsel is excused. And that concludes our January panel.